Twitter is the main thing at System Center Universe, as any conference these days. If you are not on Twitter, I recommend get on it. It's simply the way me and Kent these days get our daily feed of updates. It's just a very convenient way to, with just a few minutes every single day, get up to speed about what's going on in the area that you are interested in. So please don't only follow me and Kent on Twitter. Check the people we are following, because we are trying to follow guys like Jason, Steve, and other people that are really good with Config Manager stuff. So by following like the lead 10, 20, 25 people, you get a pretty good understanding about what's going on. All right, so this is the 10 issues with Config Manager, and it's not the like the top 10 issues of the world combined. This is what we've seen in the forums and by visiting customers, etc. And we are rebooting your machine. All right.
That's a number one issue.
Number one issue, reboots, yeah. So at numbers 10, spot number 10, deploying clients in a sequence. When you deploy a task sequence, you do OSD. Most of you are still deploying Windows 7, but you may eventually deploy Windows 8 or Windows 10. You want to make sure that the sequence also installs the latest client. Now, by default, Config Manager doesn't do that for you. It will install just the base package. But there are some things that you can do to improve that. For example, what was released 2 days ago or 1.5 days ago? CU4 for Config Manager, containing updates for the client. So obviously, we need to make sure that our sequence can deploy that. And there are three ways of doing this. We start with the wrong way. This. SMS TSM data path is evil. Don't use it. Why is it evil? And Jason and Steve and Kent is not allowed to answer. Why is this evil, that variable? It points to a folder, right? Problem is, the folder may change. Because during OS deployment in Windows PE, that variable is set to something, like the E drive. Because drive letters in WinPE are temporary. And then the machine reboots, and suddenly the E drive is now the C drive. And at that point, it tries to install the client and can't find the patch. So don't use that one. Less evil is putting a guitar into the picture. And that's using another variable, the SMS or folder, the C colon SMSTs task sequence, which always will be available at deployment time if you do it right. Do not deploy Windows to the D drive or to the E drive or anything else but the C drive. You will be surprised how many applications that will actually break because it's not on the C drive. Now, this will work for most of you. And I've been using techniques like this for years. But there is a scenario where this one also will be slightly evil. Do you know when? If you ever need to repair the client, it will look for that folder to find the patch to repair the client. And I promise you, at that point, that folder is no longer there. It's only there at deployment time. So what I recommend is getting a script to do it for you. This is very happy Sauroman. Deployment guys, Michael Mergolo, published 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, 18 months, a really nice script that you can simply add to the sequence and to your Config Manager client package that will automatically update it to whatever hotfix you copy into the client package. So I'll show you how that is done. I have my demo environment here. Just going to verify that Zoomit works. Zoomit. Thank you. Software library. Here I have a bunch of sequences, as you have, a few Windows 10 ones, but I'm going to do the Windows 7 one because that's the one you guys are deploying still. What I do in my sequence is that prior to the action that installs the Config Manager agent, which is this one here, I have no installation properties in that one at all, but I have a script that I call before that that will set the patch property automatically. For that script to work, And that script you download from the Diplomat Guys webpage, which you have here. If you search for patch, property, and deployment guys, you'll find the script. And again, Michael Morgolo. So I simply copy that to the package. But before running that patch or script, I also need to specify a property. This is a weird one. You don't need a fallback status point at all. It's just that the script looks for this property, so it needs to be there. I mean, in CMO 7, it was very common to use a fallback status point. Now in CMO 12, not so much anymore. In my package, if I go to my ConfigMinder client, I always keep a separate package for my client so that I can test it without breaking anything else. So to that package, I simply copy the normal client files and that script and the reference to the CTI utility script. It requires that component from MDT. Then in each of the 32 and 64-bit folders, I have a hotfix folder. And in this hotfix, I simply copy the KB article and the client update from that. Because when you install CUT4 or any update on your machine, in the installation directory where you have config manager, if you go to the hotfix folder, this is where you find the latest update, this one, and you have a client, and this is where you find the update. So you simply copy that file over, you add the script, you configure the sequence, and that's it. It will now automatically install the latest version and store it locally so that if the client needs to repair itself, the component is there to do it. So this is simply the best way I've found to have an up-to-date client in Config Manager. All right. Number 9, that would be Mr. Kent. Here we go.
So, number 9 normally happens like 5 seconds into the project. It's already in the beginning that we start making the mistakes. I'm clicking here and nothing happens there.
Yeah, but now we have an image of yours.
So. Oh! See, it's working.
Magic.
Here we are. So it's, as I said, it's in the beginning. And I have a question for you. What is the similarity between a unicorn and a standard SQL configuration? Exactly. They are both cute and have no place in the data center. And that is what I see happening at like 8 out of 10 of Config Manager customers that I go to. They have ordered all this very nice hardware. And then they go ahead and install SQL, do nothing about it, because they have learned that SQL needs to be on-premise. The DBA guys want to manage SQL, but we have told them, no, you cannot do that. So now they're kind of not so happy with us. So they'll just leave us alone, and we go ahead and install Configuration Manager. We will, at one point, run into performance issues with that behavior. How can we avoid that in the beginning? Well, we can start by reading the TechNet article. There is a TechNet document saying more or less exactly how you should size your database, how you should size your temp database as well. Should start by reading that one. Once you've done that, you should pre-create the database. So don't let the config manager setup engine go in and create the database, because if you let that one do it, it will create a single database file. And that database file will be 5 gigabytes in size. And then from there on, you'll just auto-grow. And that's not good for performance. You also need to remember some of the other databases that you have. I would say at least at 5 or 6 occasions, I've been called to a customer where they ran out of disk space. Why? Because their report server, the log file, just kept on growing and growing and growing. And then at one point, they ran out of disk space. So there are a few things you have to do. You don't have to be an expert, but what you should do is you should consult an expert. And
it helps being an expert.
It helps being an expert, but if you're not an expert, then
you can buy your book.
No. Hey, they can do that. They can always do that.
They call Steve.
They can call Steve. Or they can at least log into Steve's website here, because he has a lot of different tools and scripts and pretty good advice on how you treat your Config Manager database. I'm going to show you some of those tools a little later. One of the other websites that I mentioned is the TechNet website. So here on TechNet, it tells us exactly how, or they recommend how we should size our server. So you can see here the size of the log file, the size of the database, and also what I find very important, your TempDB. I see so many customers not touching their TempDB at all. And I think by default, it's like 8 megabytes in size, and it will increase with something like 10% or 1 megabyte. And when you look here, you can see, well, it should be 30% of the total Config Manager size. So if your Config Manager database is 50 gigabytes, then there is a long way from 8 megabytes till 50 gigabytes, and it should be 30% of the 50 gigabytes. How do we figure all of that out? I created a couple of years ago a very, very, very basic Excel spreadsheet that I use every time I set up a new Config Manager environment. And there is no hocus pocus in this one here. This is all taken from TechNet. Okay, so I have the number of clients, 12,500. I have an estimated database size per client. It really depends on what you're going to do with in terms of software inventory, hardware inventory, history, and so on and so forth. Then I have some hardware specs in here, so I have a couple of processors, I have some cores, and over here I have the numbers from TechNet. Notice that the size of my database is estimated to become 67 gigabytes. Number of files, this is just a rule of thumb in SQL that you should have one file per call. I never ever do that in Config Manager. I normally just create 4 database files. So now I have a size approximately 17 gigabytes. And if I look at my log file, my TempDB log file, TempDB database, then that one should be 20 gigabytes.
And this also assumes that you did this attach 4 virtual cores to that VM, obviously. Yeah.
And as I said in the beginning, by default, it's 8 megabytes. There's a long way from 8 megabytes to 20 gigabytes. I always start up by creating at least 2 temp databases, so 2 temp database files. And if that turns out to be not sufficient, then we can always go in and add a few additional files. But this is, I mean, we haven't even deployed any clients yet. And this is one of the most commonly seen mistakes that I see. Now the question is, how do we go ahead and create the database? Because we might be Config Manager experts, but we are not really SQL experts. And as you can see here, SQL is just a doc. There you are. I have a script for this. This is a script I got from Microsoft. We will publish all the scripts and references to other blog posts and whatever else we have been stealing, so you can use the same. The thing is in here, I'll go in and then I will change a few things. I will go in and say, what is my site code going to be? So I want a site called PS2, add that. I have an execute command bit, 0 is for testing, it's 0 by default. 1 will actually create my database. And then I go down here. And here I specify the number of files I want. So I want 4. The size per file in kilobytes. You can change that to megabytes if you feel more comfortable counting in megabytes.
It feels cool, though.
It feels very cool. So let's just create 3.5 gigabyte here. And my log file, let's just create one on 5 gigabytes here. There you go. Then I have my autogrow. I also have a recommended autogrow in the spreadsheet. So I'm just punching in those numbers. And then I go ahead and execute this. So right now we'll create the database. There you are, CMPS2. And when I start the setup engine, it will recognize that database and it will attach to that database and use that database. And if I look in the database properties, take a look at the files in here, you can see I have four files, all 3.5 gigabytes in size, and then I have my log file. I also mentioned some of the other databases. And one of the things that I find very important is the TempDB. So make sure you go into your TempDB, and you can do this all this manually, simply changing the sizes in here, add in an extra file. So here I have two database files, and I have a log file in here as well. And I've also changed the autogrowth settings in here. So I've changed that, so every time you have to autogrow, you decide to do that, please do that by 0.5 gigabyte at a time, instead of 10%, because I do not know what 10% is. And the classic report server issue, when I open up the report server options here, we have something called the recovery model. By default, this one here is full. I have changed it to simple. I do not need the log files when I'm doing a restore. So that's one thing. Another thing that I've done is I've made sure that we take a backup of this database. So I've created a maintenance plan in here where I back up my database, my config manager database, the MDT database, and the other user databases that I have. Do we use the TempDB at all in config manager? That was a question to me, so I'll answer. Yep. This is a query I ran at a small customer just last Friday. And this is not a huge installation at all. They're just a couple of thousand. And they have been running like, you know, a standard config manager customer. They haven't done anything. And notice the I/O on your TempDB compared to the I/O they have on the config manager database. This clearly tells me that stuff is going on in the TempDB, and they only have Config Manager here. I know they have an orchestrator database, but they really, really didn't succeed in installing that. Just forgot to remove the database. So you can see it's like 56% of the I/O. It's extremely important that we do something about it. I think that was issue number 9.
All right, and we switch over to issue number 8. Which is, when you do OS deployment, there is always an opportunity for troubleshooting. OSD and Config Manager happen to be the most, well, if Microsoft gets like 10 support cases that are complex, a few of them will be SQL, but a few of them will be OS deployment, guaranteed. And it's not like it's broken anything, it's just that there are many moving pieces to it. It's like taking everything software distribution has to offer and just cram them into one pile. But the main thing is that to troubleshoot, you need the log file. And the main log file when you do OS deployment is the SMSTS log file. The challenge with that file is that by default, it's only 1 megabyte in size. And a deployment can easily do like 5 megabyte of content. And you don't need to go any higher education to realize it's difficult to take 5 megabyte of stuff and try to fit it into a 1 megabyte container. It just doesn't work. So what we need is Frank. Frank Royas, I hope I pronounced the name right, he's an escalation support engineer with Microsoft. 5 or 6 years ago, he wrote an excellent blog post on how to increase the size of that log file. Basically, if you do a search for Frank in combination with this text file, smstsini, you get the step-by-step guide what you need to do to increase the size of that log file. And that will work for bare metal deployments. But what if you're doing a refresh? That won't work because of a bug in Config Manager right now that hopefully will be fixed, but right now it still exists. And for that to be fixed, you need a free tool that was made available by 1E not too long ago, the set SMSTS log file or .exe file that you can download from their blog as well. But I'm going to show you the inner file. So if I go over to my demo environment, should be here. What I normally do, I have extra files folder. to where I store files that needs to go into my boot image. So in the Windows folder, I have created an SMSDSINI file. And in here, I can simply specify the log level. If I want, this is default, by the way, the highest level. And debug logging is not enabled by default, but if I enable that by setting it to 1, it will give me additional verbosity in the log file. And as you can see here, I have increased it to 10 megabytes rather than 1 megabyte. And I have seen very few deployments growing over 10 megabytes, so I thought it would be safe. Something you should know that if you do this, it will allow every log file to grow to 10 megabytes. So you may end up having like 400 or 500 megs of log files on your machine. So what? If you can't spare a half gig of log files on a machine running Windows, you should not be running Windows on that machine. All right, so that's my take on it. The question is now, how do I get this file into my boot image? An axe? How do I get it into my boot image? I can use this or ImageX, absolutely, to inject it. So I will find my boot image, which I have right here, content library, boot images. I pick one of them. So, all right, I have apparently two of them. So which one? Yes, exactly, the little one. The little guy, little by name and little by size, because that is, indeed, the template. Every time you update the distribution point, the top one is being generated out of the small one. So if you do any changes to this one, well, they will be in that file for a while. And then Kent updates the distribution point, and my change is, boom, gone. So do the small one. Another option than doing DSIM is that you can do an unsupported hack, trick. If you go to, let me open an elevator prompt so I have access to all folders. Control-Shift-Enter still gives me elevation, so that's good. Still the same in Windows 10, by the way. So if I go to the config manager installation directory, to the bin folder, 64-bit, and I start the OSD injection file. You can do it with Explorer as well, but this is more fun. This file contains a list of all the stuff that Config Manager itself always adds to the boot image. So it turns out that if you are a little bit creative in Notepad, you can add your own files to this list. So that every time you update the distribution point, those files will always be added as well. This is not supported, and an update may very well overwrite this file, so, you know, make a backup copy, but still it's a very nice way to get stuff into the boot image, and I don't really see the harm in it. I mean, it's just copying files, so big deal. So that's how you increase the size of the log file. Create that inner file, and life is good. And now it's number 7. Ta-da.
Ta-da-da. So number 7 is the infrastructure. Now we got started, we have installed it wrong. The next thing we do is we actually keep on just doing everything wrong. I don't know who are reading what books, but you should stop reading those books and then read some real books, because you don't need 5 primary site servers, right? Most of you in here will do fine with just 1 primary site server. I do understand that you have some DMC environments that you need to attend to. I do understand that you have test environments, Q&A environments, and multiple domains, and so on and so forth. But you can have all of them supported within a single primary site. Most of us can have that. The DMC, I see like 3 different options for us when we are managing a DMC environment. One is, if our security team really doesn't know anything about security, they will just let us manage everything from a primary site server and then just open up all the firewall holes in the firewalls, and then we can just manage everything from there. Usually that they don't allow that. We can also set up a site system server in the DMC environment. And then on that server, we will set up management point. But the thing is, a management point requires access to SQL. So we need to set up an account in our internal environment that actually has that SQL permissions. So we need an account there. And this is where some are going wrong. We also need a software update point because we don't want to utilize the one we have on the internet. And again, a software update point, maybe we want to share the same database. Well, if you don't have a trust relationship, that just has to be a one-way trust, then there is no way you can share the database. If you have a one-way trust and you share the database that you have internally, then you will run into some funny issues, because then suddenly when you're running your SMS executive service, that normally, like 99.9% of the time, runs under the local system account. The local system account of that server cannot access your internal server. So you need another account that can actually access that server. And that's one of the very rare occasions where I need to have a domain account running my Config Manager services accounts. So setting up a DMC can be easy, but it can also be extremely painful according to all the trust that you have. And then we have the multiple domain stuff. How can I manage multiple domains? Do I really need to install a secondary site? What if I do not have any trust between my one domain and the other domain? Can a secondary site fix that? Because it could in CMO 7, and the answer to that is no. If you have a secondary site, you still need a two-way trust. So the easiest for me is actually just having a single primary site and then go into that single primary site and configure support for multiple domains. It's not that difficult. There are a few things that we need to know. Once we know that, it will take us a couple of minutes to set it up. So how do we avoid all the issues? I would say that some of the issues I run into is because we do not keep it simple. I mean, why do we want to have so super complex environments? I do understand that every customer is different and every customer do not look like any other customers, or at least so that is what they're saying. At the end of the day, more or less, all customers are alike, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But you're still special. So I would say keep one site to manage them all. And once you have that single site, see if you can get that site to manage multiple domains. Don't have to worry about a trust relationship. All you have to worry about is accounts. So make sure that you have some accounts that actually can be used in those untrusted domains.
I think you can still use the original wording, one site to rule them all.
I would say, yeah, too. So let's have a look here. So in my environment here, I have a single primary site. And on side by side with my normal domain, I have a, let's just get that one down there. I have a untrusted, it's really not the best screen resolution. I have an untrusted forest. So the more or less the only requirement as I see when you want to set up multiple forest support is name resolution. So what I've done is I've just set up a secondary zone, so I have some name resolution to the other forest. After I did that, I extended the schema because I want to publish information about my management point in that other forest. I have created a domain account because I need someone who has permissions to publish the information in the schema. So when I'm adding in my forest support in here, the forest that I have is called sc2012.local. I think that was a comma. There you go. I'm going to use a specific account in here. So I'm going to specify a new account, and my account is sc2012. And then I created a user account over there. Like that. So this is an account that I created in my in the other forest. And this account here will have access to the system management container. It will have access to write all the stuff that it needs to the system management container in here, just like you would normally do when you're creating the system management container. For publishing, I'll go in and publish my information here. And why do I want to publish my information? I want to publish my information because I'm lazy, and I want to make it as easy for me as possible to become the config manager administrator of tomorrow. So when I'm starting to deploy clients over there, I can just have them go to Active Directory and look up the information about the site, just like I can do in my normal environment here. So I'm clicking OK. And what happens right now in the background here is that my hierarchy manager will try to publish information and see if it actually has the right permissions. So, should have happened there. So you can see here that it's searching, it's publishing information in the SC2012 forest. And you can see that it's using the account in here, searching for the container do exist, and then it's updating the information. So I don't have any trust relationship between the two in here, not at all. The next thing we want to do is, before we start installing any clients, we also want to discover the systems over there. And when I discover the systems, I have a hard time finding my domain. So that I can't browse to the information. So what I do is I simply type it in manually. So I just go in here and then I type in the LDAP path. Once I've typed in the LDAP path, I can specify again the account. And it doesn't have to be the same account. It's just me being lazy. And once I've typed in that account, my discovery process will work. I'm still unable to browse over there right until the point where I go into my LDAP path and type in the domain name. So when I go in here and type in sc2012.local in front of the other LDAP path, then I can browse. So I'll be prompted for my super secret password. And I can go in and say, OK, these are the objects that I want to discover in my untrusted domain. So run the discovery process. And it will just use the CM underscore this account when it connects to the domain. another what I would call kind of advanced infrastructure I've seen is environments where you do not have any internet access. That's not very common, but we do have some services, and I know you have some services here in the country as well that do not have any internet access. But still, they want to patch their workstations. They still want to patch their clients. So how do they download the updates from Microsoft? Previously, what I've seen is that you have a server that will have internet access. And on that one, you have the software update server. And it's then downloading. And then you're using your Windows Server utility to export those updates and export that cat file. It's a lot of manual work. We recently ran into one of those scenarios. And what we did was, we did something that Microsoft didn't have in the Config Manager environment. We have a Config Manager server here, full access to the internet. So what I do in here is I download my updates, I create my software update groups, and this is my, you know, kind of my test environment or production environment with internet access. Then once I've done that, then we have a little utility up here that will allow me to export my software updates. So this will actually export all the updates that I have in this software update group, all the metadata and what have you. So just point that to a folder, and then I take those updates, and then I go into the internal environment where we do not have any internet access, and then I just use the import feature. So this takes me a couple of minutes instead of several hours or maybe even days every single month.
It's quite nice.
This is really nice. Thanks.
Issue number 6, all right. Most of you that have been doing OWASP deployment know that applications during a sequence has been a challenge over the years. It simply has not been very reliable at all ever since CMO 12 was released. I mean, the application model is great, user-targeted and all that, but when you do OWASP deployment, it doesn't really make sense to target applications to a user. You typically target them to a machine. Even though the sequence can actually start installing apps targeted to like Kent directly after it's finished, I normally don't recommend do that because you have no control. You don't even see what's going on. And if you have 3 apps and you want to reboot between number 2 and number 3, it's not doable. But when you have them in the sequence, you can control it completely. So I prefer it to still do it on a per machine when I do OSD. So the previous solution to get apps in the sequence was simply to use plenty of hotfixes. And it still didn't work. But you used packages. Because packages you already had. Because most of you migrated from CMO 7. And you already have all those packages. They were well tested. You just copied them over and used them as is. Beautiful. They just worked right out of the box. I haven't seen a single package fail because it came over to the CMO 12 environment. It just works. That's the reason most of you have been using packages. And that's also the reason I've been recommending to use packages every single time until a few weeks ago, where Microsoft released what they have called the hotfix for applications in sequences, which is now rolled into Cumulative Update 4 that was released the day before yesterday. And as elegantly as Mr. Nash put it on his blog from yesterday, pesky apps in OSD bug squashed. I don't know yet if that's true, but I know that the Config Manager product team has been working hard to get apps going in the sequence, the real applications, not just packages. So we'll see. For now, I'm still using packages, but I will eventually test to use more and more applications in my sequences to see if the problem really is fixed. But I think the solution is easy. If you run into a problem, make a copy of your sequence. Create those packages instead and try with the packages. If that works, well, it's the application. Not the sequence itself.
Hey, it's so. Not me. It has to be the app.
Exactly. It has to be the application. No, but hopefully most of these issues have been addressed, but I'm not sure yet. We'll see. All right. Dawn of tomorrow.
The dawn of tomorrow. So I found this, and I thought it sounded really good. So I read it to my wife, and she was like, "What do you mean by that?" I don't know, it's on the internet, so it's smart. So what I mean is, we need to, as config manager administrators, we also need to see what's coming. We have been managing PCs for years and years by now. Not that long ago, I was presented with this growth here, and the lower numbers there, the dark blues, that is the growth in PCs. So it's telling me there is still stuff to be done by guys like Johan and me and all of you in the future, which is good. But when I look at the growth in mobile devices and smartphones, I kind of know where I want to go. And we want to be in that space. We want to learn how we can actually manage those devices. So some of us has been struggling with the config manager in Intune for, I would say, a little over a year and a half. Sometimes it has been a little frustrating, but ever since October of last year, it has become easier and easier and easier. And I would say right now, I feel kind of confident going to a customer and implementing a hybrid mobile device management solution. There are still things I would like to see, but those are coming. And I'm not talking about a standalone Intune solution. because as Brad mentioned this morning, was it 70%? I think he mentioned 70% of all, you know, Windows devices are managed by Config Manager.
All so, enterprise clients, yeah.
Yeah. So when I go to a customer and they already have Config Manager, I mean, they wouldn't call me if they don't have Config Manager. That would be wrong number. then, of course, I do not want to implement a standalone solution. Why would I? I mean, they want to have a single pane of glass to manage all their devices. That makes perfectly sense. This is my kind of my personal when I've been asking people, so how many are managing their smartphones, and it's like less than 10-15% right now managing smartphones through Configuration Manager or any other system. And that just makes it a huge opportunity for all of us, which is kind of nice. And you cannot trust what you don't manage. I mean, that's so simple, so easy. If you do not manage it, how can you trust it? I went to one customer like just before Christmas. There were only about 1,000 users, but still they had like 5,000 devices. They could see that in the Exchange Active Sync because those were all the mailboxes that they had, which is kind of strange. So they had Android tablets somewhere, they had iPhones and iPads and what have you, and they were simply not managing them. And some of them run around with information that maybe a competitor wants to have. So we need to kind of understand what Config Manager can do for us today, and then we need to act now. And I'm not super desperate or anything like that. I'm pretty sure that if you act tomorrow, that will be okay, so you don't have to leave the room by now. But you should go back home, and then you should just start looking into some of the things that we can actually do.
I mean, I often hear from customers that, all right, Config Manager can't do absolutely everything in terms of managing a mobile device, but it's often good enough. And good enough is infinite much more than not being managed at all. And you have it in the box already.
Yeah.
So if you get the Intune license thing.
If you get the Intune license. So let's see if this here wants to play along with me.
You mean actually project an image?
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool app though.
Yeah. And it works sometimes, which is also kind of cool. Come on.
There you go.
So the reason why I want to show you this is in when I did the first kind of, I don't know, five projects or so, when I enrolled the device, I was trying to really keep a conversation going with the customer because I knew it would take 40, 45 minutes before it got the email profile and so on. And they're just smiling at me and said, you know what, we're going to keep what we have because we cannot enroll a device and then tell to the user, well, in 45 minutes you might be able to use it. It simply doesn't work. That has changed. And it has changed for several reasons. First off, they have now been telling us that we should never ever deploy anything to the device. We shall always deploy profiles and settings and so on to the user. Because when I enroll a device here, what happens is when I connect to Intune the first time, it already knows who I am. So all my user settings will be applied almost instantly. So and almost instantly, that is like within 1 minute, maybe 2 minutes, but after that, I will have my security settings, I will have my Wi-Fi profiles, I will have my certificates, I will have my email settings. Let's see here if I can just... sign in. apparently you're not seeing anything up here.
Which is good right now.
Which is good because it's the password. I'm just going to enroll the device in here. It's, see here if we can.
Log in?
Yeah.
If you want, I can do some software updates while you're.
Nope, not really. You can be the person counting and seeing how long it actually takes.
Does it go above 10? Because I have limited resources.
So, I have multi-factor authentication. So what it's going to do right now is it's going to ask me to authenticate myself. Once I have done that, and know those of you in the real seats, not the cheap seats in the back, you can see what's going on. Once I have authenticated in here, I'll do that with my MFA. It just sent me a message here saying that someone is trying to log in using your account. Do you want to verify that? Yep. Once I've verified that, it will start the enrollment process up here. And that will take, from now on, it will take me, I would say, 120 seconds before I have my email profile, my Wi-Fi profile, everything. So I'm ready to actually use this device in here. See, this one here kind of
Doesn't project.
It's more fun when you can actually see stuff. So just enrolling the device, trying to get this one here to project.
Wow.
See, this is fault tolerance. How can you make one iPad into two? That's so cool.
I'm impressed.
So I have one iPad for sale, for instance, by the way.
Yeah, a virtual one.
A virtual one. I've virtualized it. So, and by the way, it's the one generating the key that you want to keep an eye on. So it's just installing the profile right now. Those of you who attended the session just before lunch here, you also saw that. That was just controlled by a standalone Intune. So I'm installing the profile. Once I've installed the profile, it will be ready.
No, I'm not doing anything.
Nope, you're not touching the iPad. Just leaving it. Yeah.
I'll hold it.
Thank you. So if you look at what I've done in, while that one there is enrolling, what I've done in so I still have my iPads up here. A few things that I've done, besides setting up and configuring my Intune connector, I have created my Wi-Fi profile. I've deployed my Wi-Fi profile, as you can see here, to all Intune users. So that is just a collection I have with all the Intune users in here. I have created an email profile. That email profile is just a normal Exchange ActiveSync profile. There's nothing fancy in here. And this one here again, I have deployed to all users. In the beginning, we deployed to devices, and it took, like, as I said, 40, 45 minutes before something actually happened. And already by now, I can see, thank you, that it's asking for my password. So this is the password for my Exchange account. So this one here is enrolled. I already have my email profile down here. All I have to do is just type in the password, and it will start synchronizing that. I'm not going to do that right now. Instead, I will just have a quick look. think that one is done. Well, what I wanted to have a look at is just the management profile. You can see that in the background there. The management profile will tell us exactly what it has deployed. So in there, you will see how many Wi-Fi profiles I have deployed now. Do I trust remote management? Yeah, why not? I'm a married man. I have nothing to lose. So I'm done. So all in all, if you don't have a guy like me talking here, I mean, this is 120 seconds from you enroll until you actually have your resources. And it said something like device not added. I think it was added already. So up here you can see, I don't know if you can read that, but it actually tells us how many, I have my mobile device management, I have my Exchange account, my Wi-Fi network, I have two certificates. So all of this was just enrolled the first time I actually connected to Intune. And as Johan mentioned, once that has happened, I will have all of my devices up here alongside with all the other devices. So I can go in and create collections. I can do whatever I want to do with these. These exist in the Config Manager database. And that's, to me, the big difference and the big benefit compared to do an Intune standalone solution. Enough, Apple. Back to you, Johan.
Yeah. I might have tweeted that quote.
So I just need a place to sleep.
Well, you know someone was going to anyway. It might as well be me. You can at least yell at me. Another thing that a lot of people run into as an issue is trying to do software updates during a Config Manager OS deployment. And the challenge is that if you feed the sequence with too many updates, it normally just times out. So what I've seen companies do is they try to work around this by having like multiple software updates actions and try to do like a reboot in between, and they can run for hours until they get all updates in. And especially for those of you still deploying Windows 7, I mean, there's like 150 updates that needs to go into a Windows 7 image until Microsoft eventually will release, you know, like a fully patched ISO, which I still hope to see one day. I know they're thinking about it, but I haven't seen more proof than that. So what I recommend using instead is making sure that everything that can be updated in the image should be updated before you actually deploy it. And the way I recommend doing that is using the LightTouch standalone solution as well. And the main reason I recommend using that is it always bloody works. Every single time. It also handles updates that normally freaks Config Manager out, you know, updates that require multiple reboots and such. There is a Knowledge Base article listing all the updates that you simply cannot have in Config Manager. But LightTouch actually can deal with those more easily than you can do in Config Manager. So what I've done is on my blog, not that one, but Deployment Research, this is where I post most of my findings that I run into. And for example, here there is a blog post on how you can create a Windows 10 reference image if you want to play around with that one, even though Microsoft not yet have released support for either MDT or Config Manager. You can actually play around with it and test it if you follow these instructions. I also have a blog post that is worded deploying images like a boss. I'm not kidding. Here we go. Building reference images like a boss. All right. So here are some guidance, some step-by-step resources. Let me get Summit up and running. Set up old. I love this utility. So step-by-step guidance on Microsoft TechNet. And I know that TechNet documentation is awesome. I kind of wrote it for them. But There is also a recording that will take you through everything. And there's also a virtual lab up on TechNet Virtual Labs, where you have like a manual on one page and a bunch of VMs on the other window. And you simply go through the entire process of creating a reference image from nothing to finish. And that will take about 45 minutes. So if you have 45 minutes to spare, you can actually learn how to create a fully automated reference image. And it can be automated to a point. When I need a reference image, I will go to a folder where I have a PowerShell script. And I run that PowerShell script. And in about an hour and a half, I have a fully up-to-date reference image, including all my updates, all my applications, and everything. And it's on my site server, ready to be added and to be deployed by Config Manager. So this is called like a factory machine or factory fabric to do these images. In the back end, I have an MDT server running. Well, that's not the MDT. I have to type correctly as well. The deployment workbench that you get when you install MDT, this is simply where you add in your operating systems that you want to be able to build a reference image of. So I have a Windows 7, I have a Windows 8, I have a Windows 10, I have a few servers, and then I have my sequences that builds these machines. So if I need a reference image for Windows 7, 64-bit, this is just a list of actions that happens. And in here, I can install the various components that I add. And if I want to have updates, I simply go in and enable these ones. Because what will happen is that when the sequence comes to that point, it will simply install those updates. And patch everything that I had in here, Office, Silverlight, C++, everything. There is a component in Config Manager that does offline servicing of updates. It's right here. If I go to an image that I've added in Config Manager, and wait, as you do, and right-click and say Schedule Updates, if I have deployed any updates for Windows 8 in this case, they will be listed here. And I can inject them offline eventually. Don't do this. It's not very reliable at all yet. I hope Microsoft will nail it eventually, but still, it's not reliable. You are more likely to break your image than to actually succeed patching it. And you need to keep backup copies all the time. So again, I still recommend to do, for now, the complete building capture in LightTouch. As I said, it's very easy to set up and get going. It's very solid, and it can be as automated as you like it. You simply have more options when doing that. Some tricks I posted on my blog here, and I'm just going to kill that VM for now. I'm not going to wait until it completes. Since it's automated, I don't really care so much if it takes like 2 hours or 3 hours. But sometimes when you are on a customer site and you develop the reference image for the first time, you may need to generate it like 25 times until you sort of nail it, everything in it. And there are some stuff you can do to make it more convenient. For example, there was a hotfix release for Windows 7 a few months back. And it's built into Windows 8.1. An option to use a dism command to do a cleanup operation before you capture it. So in my sequence, before sysprep runs, I have a script that runs this, and this is a link to where you can download that script from the famous deploymentbunny.com website, which is Michael Nystrom's site. But it actually does some magic to your images. So this is a server image with and without the cleanup operation. Same image, same updates, everything. It does about a gigabyte in size. It's not that much, but it's 20% less for you to replicate to every single distribution point and at deployment time. So it's faster. It takes some time to run this, though. It can take like an hour. But there are things you can do to speed up. For example, the virtual machine that you use, and please don't ever show me a physical box that you are using for creating reference images, because I will be upset. but use a VM. I don't care if it's Hyper-V or VMware, but pick one of those two. But you can assign multiple CPUs, and that will shave off like 15 minutes from the capture. If you're still deploying Windows 7, you don't have to do anything. But if you're deploying Windows 8, or building reference images off of Windows 8, you can find that hacking one of the scripts allow you to shave off another 15 minutes from the deployment. Because you will find out that simply waiting for like 15 minutes before it's actually start to do any capture. So there's a script you can download. It is just an updated MVT script. Obviously, you should have solid state drives. That's like the main takeaway from this event. Tell your manager that you should have a solid state drive. Johan and Ken sends their regards. Don't invoice us.
Nope.
But if you don't have a solid state drive, or if you simply have a lot of RAM that you can't use for anything else, there is a RAM disk that you can download. It's a free RAM disk from Starwind that will actually create a physical drive out of RAM. And then you can put your VM, your VHDX file or your VMDK file on that RAM disk. And I can tell you, you get some pretty good performance on that disk because RAM is fast. It won't survive a reboot of the machine, obviously, but still, we are deploying a reference image, who cares? If it fails, machine reboots, I do it one more time, try it again. But yeah, some neat tips and tricks to get your life a little bit easier in terms of, you know, creating reference images. All right. Ta-da. More software updates. It's so funny.
How can this be painful? I mean, I don't understand that. Believe it or not, we still walk into customers who are not patching. And it's not like that they're patching, they're just using another, you know, way of patching. It's like, no, they're not patching at all. I had one of those projects last week, kind of interesting, being approached by one saying, hey, we are not patching, can you assist us? I mean, so you're not patching, so does that mean you're not patching using Config Manager? No, we haven't been patching anything for 3 years. Wow. that was quite interesting, actually. Going in and asking them why, what I see is, I see a lot of customers making this super complicated. So we do understand that we have an automatic deployment rule. We do understand that that one can create a software update group, and that software update group can create a single deployment. And then I see customers going in and creating, you know, like 25 automatic deployment rules, because then they get 25 deployments, so they have automated the process. The thing is, when they have to change anything, they have to do it 25 times. And I don't get that. I do not get why you want to go in and create an automatic update group with your Windows 8.1 updates and your Windows 7 updates and your 2008 updates. Maybe it's just me who don't understand it, but why not just create a single software update group and then within that software update group, automate the way that you create your deployments. So if you can do that, then you have a single update group per month, and then you might have, you know, like 5, 10, 15, 25 deployments within that update group. It doesn't have to be more complex than that. And the same, I mean, it doesn't really matter if we have one domain or 25 domains. It's exactly the same.
I mean, I often see customers, they do like two. They do one for clients and one for servers. And that's fine, but still way less than 25.
Yeah. Another complaint we get is the overview. So now we have deployed the updates. We do not know how compliant we are. Nope, because the reports that we have in the canned reports we have might not be the best. So you have to go in and develop your own reports, or you have to somehow get an overview. But first, you need to understand and know when you're happy, or more important, when your boss is happy, because when she's happy, you're normally also happy. Is that when you reach 85%? And those of you who attended Wally's session, 85% means what? Because do you know how many active clients you have? Do you know how many of your clients are in a reboot pending? Have you defined when a client is actually healthy? And being active, is that the same as being healthy? Normally not. So you need to define all of that. And that's why I'm saying that planning is everything. It's really, I mean, once you have sat down and you drink, you know, a cup of coffee or maybe eight and plan everything, then it's so much easier for you to go in and have Config Manager do exactly what you want to do. Other issues, maintenance windows. When do you have your maintenance window? Normally, we know that updates are released patch Tuesday. So what most companies want to do, they want to start rolling updates out Wednesday, the first Wednesday, the day after patch Tuesday. How do we define that maintenance window? Well, if I go into my Config Manager environment here, and I find my collections, I have my collections in a folder. Yes, I use folders. For me, it's very simple. Again, that's just because I don't know any better. I have software update management, server, maintenance window 1, 2, 3, and so on and so forth. And then I have a document where I've defined, well, all the servers in maintenance window 1, they will be patched, patch Tuesday plus 1. So that will be the day after patch Tuesday. How can I configure that? Because when I go in here and create a maintenance window and say I want to create a monthly maintenance window, can I configure this? Yeah, sure I can. But it would be wrong. Because the second Wednesday is not the first Wednesday after the second Tuesday. Sometimes it will be, but sometimes it won't. So what we have here is, we have in my demo a little CSV file. And in here, I have defined my collections and then the plus days. So server maintenance window 1, please go in and configure in that collection a maintenance window the day after. Then we have this one here, PowerShell. So when I run my PowerShell script, it will go in and then it will configure, it will figure out the maintenance windows that I've defined, and then it will go in here and set the maintenance window. So if you look here, you can see I have a maintenance window and that it will occur on a specific date. That's pretty neat. Second question is, why is this not built into the program, to Config Manager? I have no idea. I know that a lot of guys, including Jason, has raised this like so many times internally. Hopefully it will come. Until that day, we have PowerShell. Notice I also have a future maintenance window, and that is just because if we get, you know, like a junior consultant, Johan, into the software update management process. He accidentally releases the updates. I just want to have, you know, don't do anything. So I have a future maintenance window here in 2020. And in 2020, I will be on vacation. So that's the reason why I have that. So besides being able to configure my maintenance windows, it's also nice to be able to document my maintenance windows. So we have another PowerShell script here that will go in and document the maintenance window I have in my CSV file. So this is just nice documentation. So then this PowerShell script here, this you will run as a scheduled task the first of each month. So we'll go in, delete the non-recurring maintenance window I had from last month, just do some house cleaning, and then it will set a new maintenance window. And if you look at the maintenance window I had here, the one that I configured, you'll notice that this one here doesn't have any recurrence. Because if it had, I mean, that would be a mistake. Next month, it's not this the same MV. So that is one issue I see. Then a couple of weeks ago, one of my very good friends from Belgium, Kenny, he had another issue. He had customers complaining. See why we have it. About the balloon tips. You know, you can send out mails to your users and say, hey, we're going to patch tomorrow, and yada, yada, yada. They don't see that. And then they complain because the balloon will only stay there for like 5 seconds. There is a registry setting. And Kenny Buntix, I'll give you the blog post, he created a CI. So he has a CI here that will go into registry. And then in here, you can configure the value. So he has configured the value in his example here, so it will actually show for 20 seconds. Of course, now your users are just going to complain about the balloons showing too long, but then again, I mean, try with 12. So that's another issue I've seen. It's not a major issue, but it's still a little issue. Being able to monitor how we are doing with our deployments, that we have addressed. We're not doing very good because red is not good, but this is our own internal dashboard. So when I look at this dashboard here, I can see I have deployed some updates to a lot of servers and none of them are compliant. I don't really care about that because I'm only responsible for workstations. So when I click here, it will take me to my reporting server. And then in here, I can start to figure out, so why are we not compliant? So this one here will tell me, well, you're not compliant because there are a lot of updates that you have actually not deployed. Okay. So I have a list of my top 25 updates. I also have a list of the top 25 clients in here. So these are the bad guys. I know that those servers, I recognize the server names. Those are some of our host servers. And I can click here and say, well, so what other updates are you missing? And then it's going to drill into another report, and it's going to tell me, well, for this server here, I can see you don't have any maintenance window. So all in all, I'm the one to blame, because I don't have any maintenance window for this one here, so it will never ever really install anything for me, or it will always install depending on how we have done stuff. So you can use the built-in reports, but you might be better off creating your own custom reports. Oops, let's go into the right one here. The reboot issue. That's another one. I don't know how many of you are restarting, but until you have restarted, you're not compliant. We know that. And if you cannot restart, the least you can do is come up with a utility. We have a utility here. You can see this is a shutdown tool. It's available on our blog. It's free. And I'm running this on our clients. And every Monday morning, if they have not rebooted for 7 days, it will just pop up. And then it will give a text in here and say, well, it doesn't look like the force is with you any longer. You have to reboot. And all depending on how you configure this tool, the user can postpone this for a number of hours, a number of minutes, and so on and so forth. But you need to have a plan for that. And then, of course, you need to be able to, I'm done in just a second here, you need to be able to automate how you deploy your updates. When you have an automatic deployment rule, you know that it will have a single deployment. And what you need is you need maybe 10 deployments or 15 deployments. You can automate that. We have something called the Update Manager. It's a free tool, again, available on our website. So the only thing you do is just create deployments based on your templates. It will now read all of the templates that we have. So I can go in here and say, well, I want to deploy to that one. I want to deploy to that one, and so on and so forth. So I'll select the dates. This will become my deadline and the time. and my workstation production, just go ahead and do that as soon as possible and hit create. So now it's creating 25 deployments or how many templates I've selected up here, and then it will create all of those deployments. And I haven't done anything because it was all of this was created by the automatic deployment rule. So far I haven't done anything really. Back to you, mister.
You missed, we had a very interesting Twitter conversation going on here, discussing your age.
My age?
Age.
As in how old I am?
Yes.
See, I'm wearing the Robin costume, and you're wearing the Batman costume.
So I'm older?
You're older.
Okay. One challenge I see customers run into all the time when it turns to OS deployment is that obviously you want to assign settings. You want to assign a computer name, an OU to put the machine into, the right time zone, the right application list, the right packages list, what have you. Simply a bunch of different settings. And by default in the sequence, there is no way to simulate that. You know, you can simulate an application deployment, but you can't simulate a full sequence deployment. So what you have to do is to find an unused machine, and you press F12, and you deploy your sequence to it, and then you verify the result. And that will take about an hour, hour and a half on a good day. So you can maybe do like 5, 10, 5, 6 tests on a day. That's not very efficient. Instead, you can use a rule simulation so that you can simulate what you have without actually doing a deployment. So if I go to my C drive, I have an MDT folder here. And this is MDT integrated with Config Manager, I should say. Works also for standalone, for those of you who are using that one. In here, I have a few scripts. And those I have copied from the MDT installation directory. So I need a few scripts, copy and paste. And then I simply take the rules that I have that I want to test. And I put them in an inner file. And I can run a simulation and say, all right, what if I would deploy this machine? What computer name would it get with this current setting? And I can run that simulation. I run a PowerShell script. You can download this from my blog. It's just a PowerShell script calling a VB script, because I can. But I also do some additional checks, deleting a folder and stuff in it. But after doing that, I can go into the log files. And I can open the log file from the gather process. And I can see that if I would have deployed this machine, in fact, it would have been given that computer name. Because one of the properties that it learns in the beginning is that, for example, my serial number was this. And everything that you see that is being gathered, you can have as conditions to your deployments. So for example, it detected that my laptop apparently was a laptop, which was good. I would be surprised otherwise. But it knows that by in the back end doing a WMI query, asking for the chassis type, and for all the types that goes for a laptop, it responds, this is a laptop. It returns that I'm not running on battery, which is good because I'm doing a presentation. And running on battery, I've tried that once in Vegas. I didn't realize that my power just came out a little bit. So in the middle of my session, it just went black. And I was bad when you present things. But it can also be bad when you do OS deployment. So you can have a condition to say, hey, if you are running on battery, abort. You can have that in your sequence. I can also see that I'm not having UEFI enabled, and I can take action on that. But let me give you an example of the is laptop one, because it's quite useful. If I go back to my folder again, I have an inner file for my laptop. It's not very complex, but if I have a sequence in Config Manager and I hand it over to this ini file, or rather say allow this ini file to control my sequence, what will the sequence do if this is a desktop that I'm deploying? Well, it will install Adobe Reader in Office. It will do that for everybody. But if it's a desktop, it will put the machine into the desktop's OU. On the other hand, if it detects this is a laptop, it would instead install those two apps and the VPN client and put the in the laptops OU instead. So again, I have a single sequence that behave just very differently. The only thing you need to remember when doing rules like this, when you list packages or applications, because you can list apps as well, applications 001 and the name of the app in Config Manager, just make sure you only have one deployment type, otherwise you will be surprised. But I can test this. I can run a simulation again and see, all right, what if I would deploy this machine? What applications would be installed? Well, these three applications, because they've compiled it to a new list. And when the sequence comes to the install software action, it simply installs these three apps automatically. But again, they've been not statically added in my sequence. They are outside the sequence in an .ini file that I can simulate very quickly without having to do a full deployment. And the final example I wanted to show you, I have a question with this one. I think it's quite useful. This .ini file here, what will it enable during deployment? That is not in Config Manager by default. By changing a few lines in a text file, I enable something. What is something? Any ideas, Jason? Yeah?
Auto-resolution
detection. Exactly. This up here, by telling it to use a one-by-one resolution, you are telling Config Manager that you are nuts, because you can't have that resolution. And setup will think you're nuts. And instead, go ahead and ask the video card, the graphics adapter, all right, I'm sorry, Mr. Video Adapter, but your admin is not very bright. What resolution do you want to have? And it will give you back that resolution instead of doing the default, 1024 by 768. But on the other hand, for one specific models, you can indeed hard code. So in this example, I have one hard-coded model, but for everything else, I enable automatic resolution of the screen, which is pretty cool. All right. The grand finale.
The grande finale. I got a question on Twitter, and the answer is you have to learn how to fake it. So you have to learn how to fake. Will not say who asked the question.
Ron Brent, should we stop? Think we should stop tweeting and present?
So the question was, how can I go in and modify the templates? So now we're just back at the software update groups here. And what I mean by faking is, all you do is you go in and fake a deployment. So you select the existing template that you have. Once you have done that, you just go through, configure the settings, and then on the summary page, you save it again. And then you click cancel. That's it. So just fake it. So back to performance-related issues, because this is number one. The issue is it's slow. And it's like, what is slow? Everything is slow. Okay, sometimes slow is good, but when we talk Config Manager, it's not super good. So it's like, a lot of the stuff that you do in the console, it doesn't respond. It takes like a couple of minutes before you get you from when you double-click your monitoring until you can actually see it in here. There is a pretty good chance that you have not treated your database like a baby, and that's the reason why. So you need the. I just want to show you one thing. You probably have something like this. You turn on the, the Config Manager has a built-in task called reindex. Don't use that because it's not to be trusted. Instead, you need to implement your own reindexing stuff. Steve has a very, very good blog description on how you do that, but that is the number one issue that I see. And until you fix it, and we don't really have time to demo that, but then you will have your performance issues.
On Steve's blog, there is a step-by-step guide on how to implement a real indexer for a Config Manager that is extremely reliable. It's using the default one in SQL.
The magic word there is Ola Hellengren.
Yeah, Crazy Sweet, yeah.
Yeah. So do a search on Steve's blog. We will make a link to that as well. And then make sure you implement that solution. And you will realize that it's night and day before and after you implemented that solution. So that's a solution we implement at all our customers.
Yes, every single one. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank you for taking the time this afternoon with us and have a great conference. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.